Okay, we'll get to your comments as they're coming in very shortly. But first, I want to say good morning to Ian Harkin, chairperson of Finn Harps Football Club. Good morning to you, Ian. Thanks for your time.
Good morning, Greg. Thanks for having me on.
Before we get to this latest drive, I suppose, what is the current sort of financial status stroke viability of Finn Harps?
Yeah, I suppose, Greg, I've been on the board, joined the board 3 years ago, and I suppose coming from a, you know, having run my own business, coming into Finn Harps, one of the things that the biggest challenge that we have as a football club is sustainability. When we start the season, about 20% of our revenue for the year is secured at the beginning of the year. And that comes from, we've got a 500 club, we've got our lotto that we run, and then we've got season tickets and sponsorship. And to run your club at the beginning of the year when you've only got about 20% of it committed, it makes it's a very, very difficult business model, because then the variables that you've got throughout the year, not just your performance on the pitch, but things like weather this year as well. We've had challenges with our floodlights, and we've had to change fixtures because of things that happened in other clubs. So it's a very precarious business model. And what we're trying to do right now with our share launch this evening is to flatten out a lot of that, those variables, and to try and bring in revenue that will help us invest into our club, not just in terms of, you know, the infrastructure plan that we've got, but also in terms of the operational side of our business, because it is a huge undertaking. You know, from the board members ourselves, it's very much a volunteer-led business, and we want to change that and make some key hires to help drive the business model itself. In terms of the actual position of our club at the moment, we're actually reasonably good in terms of our positioning at the moment. We've got some challenges, but there's future revenue coming in that hasn't yet been received. So,
but also too, I mean, you don't want to tread water either, and it's a results based business. And you know, if the club is on a good financial standing, then you know, you can maybe free up resources to get the results on the pitch, because we've seen recently, you know, say for instance, you know, getting into Europe, you know, win a game, 400k into the bank. I mean, you'd do cartwheels down Ballybuffet Main Street for that, I'm sure. Do you know what I mean? So there is it's having the club itself as a business on steady foundations, and then hopefully that paves the way for delivery on the pitch, which really can be a key revenue source too.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, when I say we're in a good financial position at the moment, I'm saying that in comparison to most other clubs, not just in Ireland, but worldwide. Like, we as directors have a fiduciary duty to be able to, you know, to stand above our numbers. And it is extremely challenging every year to make numbers meet. There's no hiding that. A lot of our revenue is received at the year end as well. So it's, you know, the prize givings, the TV money, and we're waiting on that still to come, even though the season has ended. But so what we're trying to do, a couple of years ago, we made a decision to invest in our own, to develop our own players in Donegal, and to, you know, that there's a multiple different revenue streams that you can have within a business. And it's something that we've never really had is revenue from the sale of players. So what we've been doing is developing our own, giving them a chance. And, you know, in the recent number of months, we've had three or four players being not just heading over to England, but actually heading to Premier League clubs as well. So it's not something we've had for a long time. And in fairness to our current manager as well, it's a huge risk putting in young kids, because you're measured on results, and you're not going to see the results, you know, by playing young kids at senior football. And in fairness as well to the fans, they've bought into that as well. So we hope to be able to invest more into developing our own and developing that income stream as well, and providing that pathway critically as well to kids from Donegal to be able to excel, you know, in their chosen sport going forward. And hopefully then that money that you develop and you gain from it, you can invest into your team and start pushing for promotion and getting into Europe, and not just getting into Europe, but actually there's a change recently in one of the revenue streams that I mentioned that we'll be receiving towards the end of this year is a solidarity money that you receive from UEFA. And historically, we've been receiving 75 grand a year. And it's the biggest chunk of money that you receive from all of your income streams by participating. And we are now being told that that is going to be cut possibly completely. We're at the mercy, really, of the Premier League clubs. They have within their right to give us 15% of it, which would mean we'll receive about 45 grand, but they'll be receiving up to 400 grand. So the difference between the Premier League now and the First Division is massive, and it's going to get much greater, because that 400 grand, you know, you can get match financing for a lot of things. So it'll have a multiplier effect.
But before we talk about the specific initiative that we've invited you on to talk about, though, I mean, what's this, the future of football as a whole? Because, you know, clubs are losing money, lots of money. Yeah. And a lot of that's absorbed by private investors for however long they might want to do that, or whatever the motivation might be for that. But we could find ourselves in a situation, if we're not there already, that you've one or two big clubs that do very well, but they end up sort of drawing all the money to them, because success brings in money, and money brings in better players, and so on and so forth. And then you get the odd club that will break through here and there. But the further you go down the Premier Division and into the First Division, the wider the gap becomes. So is there anything that needs to be done to put football in this country on a more steady, sustainable footing? Because we are seeing really big numbers of people coming out to watch the sport, right? But is that doesn't seem to be transferring into a product that's getting more resilient to all the costs and overheads and stuff that you've been talking of?
Yeah, I suppose the when you're talking about governance and that side of things, Germany is probably the best model that you can look at. And all clubs in Germany are 50% fan-owned and 50% private. So that is probably, that's the model probably that has inspired us the most. I mean, in Ireland, Shamrock Rovers are the closest to that. Bohemians then would be 100% fan-owned. The move that we're doing this evening is going that fan-owned model. And it is, you know, we've talked about seeking investment over the last number of years. And, you know, we've been approached by a number of different people, but it never really stacked up. A lot of it would have been, you know, people coming in and looking at asset plays and trying to make money out of it in different ways. But rather, you know, the only real way that you'll get somebody that has the interests of the county and the football club at heart is if they're from Donegal, or if they've got some sort of emotional tie to Donegal. And those would be the people that we would appeal out to the most if they are interested in investing. You know, there are different ways that we can accommodate that.
Of course, Finn Harps now has developed, you know, in terms of women's participation in the sport, to have two women's teams that are active, but also to the underage efforts, you know, to bring these players through. And I know what you're saying about developing young players and then maybe selling them on, and you can put them in the shop window for that. But if you get really good at that, it's almost like you can almost have it like an academy buzz to it, where, but you sustain, you know, eight players all the time, or seven players all the time, and then the three spaces whereby, you know, you're developing players as well, because you don't want to come and empty the locker room every year either. But that all comes with a steady footing again. So this, talk to me about this plan then to move towards fan ownership and how it starts tonight and what it looks like.
Yeah, I suppose, like, you're looking at the reason why. And to me, football should be about the fans. It's about community. It's about belonging to something. And also then having that influence yourself as a shareholder, that you can, you know, you can vote, you can appoint people to the board, you can make, help, you know, steer decisions for your fan-owned club, as opposed to, you know, a sovereign wealth fund that is doing it, you know, for different sports washing reasons, or billionaires that are just, it's a plaything to them. To me, this is what football is all about. It's about community. Like, historically, if you're looking at a football club, it's, you know, you're thinking excellence in sporting excellence, and it's all first team driven. Our club is more than just the first team. It is, as you say, it's what we do with the women's teams. It's our, you know, we currently have different camps for people with neurodiversity, people with Down syndrome. We've got our futsal team, a mixed futsal team as well, which has won the All-Ireland Championship twice this year. We have a schools program as well. So where we go out into schools and we have schools competitions, we have educational elements, where we've got the Show Racism the Red Card, where we're teaching kids in school about the different social policies that matter to us. It's about inclusion. We've got a number of new citizens as well involved in the club on a voluntary basis as well. So our club is about our community, and it's about helping people feel belonging to something.
And I suppose if you have a sense of ownership to it, increases your passion and commitment. So for €25 per year, what do you get?
Yeah, so in that first year of acquisition, you're getting your share. So you're from that point forward, you will be allowed to vote as long as you keep up your annual membership. So going forward, your membership will be €25 per year, and it allows you to participate in voting, to attend the general meetings, and it will also, there'll be a number of other benefits as well that we'll list, which includes, reductions on your season ticket, and also you will also get the match program as well, digitally. So, yeah, there'll be a number of different benefits.
Yeah, so how big do you think the sign-up would be? Like, I'm thinking if 3,000 people took up this offer, that matches, albeit there's no certainty in the future of it, that matches the biggest single income the club has. 3,000 is...
Yeah,
it's not a huge figure for a population of 170,000.
No, you see,
I'm not I'm not setting a 3,000 target, by the way, just in case. I don't want to.
No.
I'm just saying how valuable this could be with a relatively low sign up.
Yeah, so like how we've priced it, we've looked at it, and we've done several meetings with our fan base, and we initially had it closer to €200, where at that point, you're really only looking at your existing fan base and your hardcore fan base as well. So, we're already asking them for money for, you know, our 500 club and our lottos and our season tickets and everything else. And I lived in London for 15 years, and you network with the Donegal community there, and everybody checks the results every weekend. It doesn't matter if you've never been to a match ever. And there's a lot of people who will say they're die-in-the-wool GAA fans as well. And, you know, they may never go to Finn Park, but they do check the results. Mm-hmm. And they do have an affinity, and they do realise that we are part of Donegal. Whether they never come to a game or not is another one. But what we would like to do is reach out to those people. And we would like to say, look, we are your club, and we want to open our doors to everybody so that we're not just a Balbuffet-centric club. We are a Donegal club, and we represent all of the people in Donegal and the greater Northwest as well, because we have a huge following as well from Castlederg and Strabane as well, just over the border. And they are a huge part of our club.
Yeah. I know it's a ridiculous question, right?
Yeah.
But when you talk about branding and you're in the business of it, I mean, obviously there'd be a huge resistance because of the history and all that. But has there ever been a conversation to rename the club Donegal FC or something along those lines?
Yeah, I mean, it has been mentioned a number of times, and you know, we have experimented with the colors as well. But I suppose there are a lot of traditionalists in our
Of
club,
course there are,
and
yeah.
they do have a heavy voice on it. But look, I think we've got a lot of other challenges with regards to the stadium and just the sustainability of our club going forward, that we're prioritizing
Right, okay. It's not high on the agenda at the
issues at the
moment.
moment, yeah.
So, I mean, obviously, the Christmas presents and all that kind of stuff sounds like a nice idea. You can effectively buy someone a share in a club. Not so bad. But if someone says, right, you know, I want to come at 100 euro per year, does that mean they get four shares? And is there any advantage to that?
Well, they can buy for other family members. There's also, in the coming weeks as well, we'll be focusing a little bit more on our stadium as well, and there will be donations that the people can make towards the stadium. So on the 21st of November, we'll be lodging our planning application for the stadium. So the huge amount of work that's gone
Yeah,
on.
it's a toughie for us, isn't it? Because I think and sort of getting from your own tone is that you just don't want to keep going back to the same well. Everything seems to go back to call on that couple of thousand loyal supporters, and they are loyal. It's about sort of saying, well, you know, fair play and do what you can do, but why not get on this journey with us if you haven't necessarily supported or backed Finn Harps in the past?
Yeah, I mean, like, we're going to be building a six, you know, 5,500, 6,000 seater stadium, and we got to fill it somehow with people from somewhere. So there are people out there, and I know that when we've always said, you know, build it and they will come, but we need people engaging now. We need people to take them on the journey towards being fans and show them like what a match night experience is. Like coming to Finn Park, it on a Friday night, it's a big occasion for a lot of people. You know, you're networking with friends, you're supporting the players from your county now. There's a huge influence of Donegal players in our team. And hopefully, you know, as we continue our academy development as well and eventually as well build our centre of excellence, that, you know, there will be a lot more players coming through.
You talked about the just finally, Ian, you talked about the stadium a couple of times there, planning. What is the actual situation a number of people want to know as it relates to the funding of that stadium?
Yeah, so in terms of the funding for that stadium, we've got a budget of around 8 million. And the element that we've got to fund ourselves is about 2 million quid. So we, as a club, have decided that we're going to debt finance that. So we are going to acquire the land off the council in Stranorlar. And we will then mortgage against that initially. And then we will look to fundraise and pay off that debt over time.
Do you not need
We
do you
are
need
still
a do you need an underwriter for that, or is the
well, we'll be able to asset back it against the stadium itself.
Okay.
Yeah, so there'll be like the stadium itself will have it's currently the valuation of the work that's currently done, the shell that's there, around 2 million has been spent
So
on
that
it to
covers
date.
that, yeah.
And there'll be
So
another 8 million spent on
the
it.
money effectively is in place, the plan is in place for that stadium to go ahead. Once
Through
planning
debt
permission
finance,
is secured.
yeah.
Okay. And finally, okay, that's encouraging, because there could be other revenue streams come from that. Who's to say? It's going to be
Yeah,
quite
we
an
still will
amazing
have
facility.
debt finance to pay off, and you know, we're speaking with the trustees of Finn Park as well about how we post. You know, it won't happen until it's finished, but ideally, we would like them to be the owners of the new stadium as well. So
Okay.
there will be a swap.
Right, more on finharps.ie, whether you are a local, or I know myself from going over to those London vintage shows. You bump into Kevin McHugh over there now and again, but there's a big network of, you know, people with a great interest in Finn Harps, and I know you want to tap into them, and a lot of them are loaded over there. But also, too, there might be other supporters around Europe who have seen how that model works in Germany and might want to have some sort of an input or to support the genuine grassroots of the game. Finharps.ie, is that the place to go?
Yeah, it should be live by lunchtime today, so
Good stuff.
fingers
All right,
crossed,
we'll
yeah.
share that link out in our socials as well. Always a pleasure. Thank you so much for your time, Ian. Take care of yourself.
Thanks very
All right,
much, Greg.
bye-bye.
Thanks for
Take
your time.
care. Ian Harkin there, who is chair of Finn Harps Football Club. All right, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. And we're joined by Pamela Malloy. Are you there, Pamela?
Hi, Greg. Yes, I'm here with Bernadine and my sister Maria down in the Dolman Centre.
How are you all getting on?
Oh, good. Good morning.
Very good.
Good morning, Greg.
And is Rachel Hughes there?
I am indeed. Yeah, how's it going?
I'm getting on great, Rachel. How are you keeping?
Great, not a bother. Excited to get up to Donegal tomorrow.
All right, you're co-founder and managing director of Sisters Sheds. Talk to me about the initiative. Is this a female version of Men's Sheds?
It is, yeah. It stemmed from something like that. You know, myself and my cousin co-founded 3 years ago. We were just coming out of COVID, and Shireen, the managing or the CEO and the other co-founder, she had gone through a bit of trauma in her life and stuff like that. And then we rolled into COVID and the whole world was on lockdown and the two of us got talking. I'm a hairdresser and we were in the hairdressers one day, and I think some of the best conversations can occur in the hairdressers, if you'd agree with me. And we were saying we would like to just create these spaces for women of all ages to be able to come and meet up with one another. The men's sheds kind of are specifically for men of a certain age, and it can happen. Like,
I know
5
it's a problem. I'm starting to get invited to them now, and I'm like, lads, I'm not there yet.
So yeah, we just kind of we came up with this idea. We both come from very holistic backgrounds, so we didn't know what we were doing, if I'm being honest with you. We just said we wanted a space for women to come. Something that I had found during lockdown was that community connection had came back massively. I mean, we were having a great time. If we weren't playing bingo in the garden, we were baking for each other, obviously keeping our social distance and stuff, but that was something that really, you know, resonated with me. I said, God, it took me back to the 80s when my own mother was a part of a women's club, and there was just great community connection. So yeah, we had this chat on a Wednesday, and by the Friday we had our first sister shed open in Dublin, and it just grew arms and legs.
And I suppose it evolves to people's needs. What has it become, Rachel?
So, like I said, when we first started it, it was just a hub to be able to come. When I say a hub, people say, are you actually in sheds? We're not. We go to local community centres, youth centres. Actually, at the very first sister shed, I rented a space in a hairdresser's because, you know, we were just wanted to keep the momentum up. People were really interested and we didn't want it to fall then. So, yeah, local community centres and youth centres and wherever we can kind of get venues. So when we first set it up, it was just a cup of tea and a chat and for women to be able to connect of all ages. And then a couple of weeks into it, we knew the ladies were either going to get, you know, fed up with us talking all the time. They needed something. So we said, right, look, because of who we are and the connections that we have and stuff like that, we've great people around us that kind of do Reiki and holisticness, meditations and stuff. So we start kind of introducing that. Then roll forward another couple of months, you're talking 12, 15 sheds in. We were actually invited into Leinster House by, Senator.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, we were found ourselves sitting in Leinster House, just two Joe Soaps. And we actually spoke with the now Taoiseach, Simon Harris. And we knew then that things were getting a little bit bigger than just myself and Shireen. The want for sister sheds was all over the country. So we started going the right road then. We registered as a non-profit. We applied for charitable status. We brought on people then to be on the board of management and just to give us a bit of a dig out with it, you know. So now Sister Sheds is a registered charity in Ireland. We received that charitable status last December, which we're very, very proud of. There's 27, soon to be 28 Sister Sheds around Ireland, and they are now classed as a lifeline for women. If they're not doing personal development, we've actually had women that have returned back to the workforce after doing confidence building programs, and they've been able to return back to work.
So you can really see, especially intergenerational, you know, you can really see whereby, because not everyone has either sisters or a close relationship with their sisters or the mum or their auntie, you know.
We say when women come together, amazing things can happen. Now, we're not feminists or we're not anything like that, you know, but it is absolutely amazing. And like that, the difference that we would, because we know women's sheds and they do absolutely fantastic work all around the country also, but they are standalone individual, whereas sister sheds, we're the main umbrella of the charity and all the groups that come off us are just branches off the tree. So basically, you could get, you know, you'll see the women now up in Donegal. Hopefully they'll come down to Dublin. They meet with the Dublin women, and it's just one big collective then. And our youngest is 25, 26 in one group, and then we have a member that's 97. So it's the younger learning off the more senior and the senior learning off the more younger, and it's just absolutely amazing.
Right, Rachel. So you're the co-founder and managing director of Sister Sheds.
I am.
Sorry, Rachel, I beg your pardon. Pamela Malloy is part of the Sister Sheds in Port New. Pamela, so why Donegal? What did you see that said, right, we can have a branch up here?
Well, the first time I heard about the Sister Sheds was when I seen the girls, Greg, on Ireland AM. They were being interviewed by Derek live from one of the sheds. And I just thought the whole concept would be an amazing asset down here for the women of Ross Bay, Port New, and the Downstrands area. You know, everything that Rachel said, the coming together, you know, the even from the youngest to the oldest, like all age groups that it appeals to. And we're really excited and looking forward. There's lovely buzz about the area.
Yeah, and you've seen what's worked, right? So initially, it's established in the Dolman Centre in Port New. It is a case in the first instance to just come in and network, have a chat, cup of tea, and then take it from there.
Yeah. So basically, on the first meeting, myself, Shireen, and one of our board members will be travelling up to the lovely Donegal tomorrow. We'll give a real insight of, you know, what way the Sister Shed goes. Your first couple of weeks, though, I know, just to be very aware, because women that look on our social media and on our website and stuff, they see all of what's going on, whether it's personal development, arts and crafts. Like, there's an array of a list of what the women get up to. They're absolutely brilliant. But them first couple of weeks is baby steps. It's very important that the women get to know each other, that they get to feel comfortable with one another, because there's no way that if you're in a room with 20 women that you're going to feel confident and comfortable enough to open yourself up in a personal development course or a mental health course or whatever it might be. So them first couple of weeks are crucial. Just with the cup of tea and a chat, but what you will find is in a group full of women, up to 10, 20 women or whatever the group size might be, them women have many, many talents. So before you know it, they could be having a crochet evening, an arts and crafts evening. So that's the way the Sister Sheds roll in the first couple of weeks. Now, since being a charity and that we're more structured and we're governance now and stuff like that, we've had to employ kind of couple of rules. We don't like to say rules because it's not skill, but it's just, you know, you have to have a little bit of structure for things to run steadily. Mm. So there is a membership fee, a yearly membership fee of €42.50. That gives you your place in the Sister Sheds, gives your affiliation to the charity, but it also covers your insurance. But there's a 4-week grace period. So any person that's joining a Sister Shed anywhere in the country, they have 4 weeks to go and get a feel for it and see if it's something that they want to sign up for then.
Pamela, who's the ladies beside you? I don't have their names.
So this is Bernadine. Bernadine works here in the Dolman Resource Centre and is my sister Maria.
All right, Maria. Bernadine, this is another great string to the Dolman Centre's bow. It's going to be really popular, I think, and great to have that local resource there to be able to hold something like this.
Oh, absolutely, Greg. It's a great facility to have here in the area, and it's bringing the community of Downstrands women together. It's a place where they can confide in each other, and they can learn so many different tasks, you know, like from DIY classes to mental health classes to, you know, simple things, Greg, you know, where we could get a facilitator in. You know, I suppose as a man would say, oh, they don't know how to change a tire, or, you know, simple things like that, where it can give us the confidence as women to learn all that. And so it's great to have it, and fair play to Pamela for coming across it, and she approached us here in the Dolman Centre to run it. So we're delighted to have the girls down now tomorrow night, and hopefully it'll be a great evening.
Pamela, what's the interest been like so far? Because the one thing I've noticed in doing lots of these different interviews, and it's all across the county, I'm thinking of a DIY class that was advertised in a show specifically for women, and it was like oversubscribed in the case of half an hour. There seems to be a massive demand for events or initiatives, particularly for women. I'm not saying this is what yous are doing, right? But like, once words got out, I presume there's been a lot of interest from women in the area.
Yeah, there has been a lot of inquiries, and a lot of people have quietly said to me, looking forward to coming on Tuesday night. So that's been lovely. And, you know, we really hope that the girls are supported in the initiative. You know, we give them a good Donegal welcome tomorrow here at the Dolman Centre, you know, with the cup of tea and the chat to kick it all off. If people are a wee bit nervous or wondering, you know, as Rachel said, it's all about the cup of tea and the chat to start off. And
so important.
And then, yeah, bring in the plumbing courses and maybe electrician courses seem to be in hot demand around here.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. But it's nice to be fit to do stuff for yourself, and it's just literally having the knowledge to do so. Another thing too, Rachel, you know what, I don't want to get serious on this, but one thing again that I've seen happens with initiatives in the past, this is the obvious stuff that happens, and then there's the other stuff whereby women that need support, or if there's something, now they're not walking in the door and saying, "Hi, my name's Greg and this is happening in my life," right? But
Well, you'd be very surprised, Greg. We've actually been told we're like AA meetings.
Well, that's
sometimes.
What I was going to say,
We'll always give the woman a clap, the bit of encouragement, because like we always say, both through life's journeys and experience that myself and Shireen have, we don't know what it's after taking for that woman to walk through that door. Nobody knows what goes on behind closed doors. And we will always say, like, one of our ethos and one of our core values in Sister Sheds is you leave your ego at the door. And thanks be to God, we're 28 sheds in now, and we've had absolutely nothing. Like, you know, there's been nothing. The women are there for the same reason. They're all there to make that connection. And some have amazing stories, some have really sad stories, but it's the stories that they learn off each other that, you know, they're getting the experience as well. But like that, it's not all rosy and sister sheds. And why it's so great for us being the charity that we are and the link-ins that we have, we will always say to the women, if someone needs an additional, you know, help out with something, always reach out to myself and Shireen privately. Sometimes it can be a little bit overwhelming in a big setting like that to say, listen, I'm having an issue with this, and we will be able to link in with counsellors or whatever it might be that woman needs. We'll go above and beyond to be able to get that woman the additional help that she might need, you know?
Because particularly in this part of the world too, rural isolation is a big issue, and it crosses...
That was one of the big things. Like, when you look back at COVID, and it was a terrible time for people, like, we had no choice but to go into isolation. We were put into isolation, and that played havoc with my mental health. But I came out the other end of it because I was like, do you know what? It shows that connection is there. People can get really wrapped up in everyday life, going to work, school runs and stuff like that. I mean, I had neighbours across the road for 6 years. I didn't know their names, but during COVID, we got to know each other because we had that time to kind of, you know, talk to one another and stuff
like that. Well, I think things like this are re-establishing community and community 100%. Support, you know, because we did go backwards to a great extent. Pamela, what's the crack with the launch tomorrow evening? Is there an open invitation? Are you limited on space? Invite only? What's the crack?
Well, no, we have a good hall here given to us by the Dolman Centre tomorrow evening at 6:15. So come along, cup of tea in the chat, meet the girls. I've come travelling all the way from Dublin.
We're only too delighted.
I think I heard that Rachel has been to Donegal before, but I'm not too sure about Serene. So,
yeah, it's been a long time ago, Pam. We'll be on Google Maps tomorrow going, oh God, pray for us, but we'll get there, we'll get there.
And I think too, hey, listen, if there's, if maybe the other half's listening, and sometimes we need a little bit of a push to sort of go along to things like this and that sort of outlet and an opportunity for personal growth benefits everyone. So, yeah, I mean, obviously women listening, right, that's for me, but, you know, no harm in the lad saying, why don't you head off, I'll look after the kids, you head off and see what you think of that.
Because it's so important to realise as women, like, and that's what something we always say, we take on them roles just initially, like, you know, the mammy, the school run, the dinners, the wife, the cooking, the cleaning. It's very important to give yourself them couple of hours a week. And, you know, you do find now the men, the husbands are saying he is off to his cult now, the sister sheds, you know, but it's absolutely fantastic.
I'm just trying to work it out with I'm trying to work it out with the football. What night is meeting? What night?
They'll be giving us the codes.
If you could do it Tuesday, Wednesday nights. Ladies, listen, best of luck with it. We'd love to get an update from you, Pam, down the line to see how it went. I know it's going to be a success because it's grown so quickly. Take care of yourselves. Lovely to
thank
meet all
so
of you.
Much.
Thank you very
thank
much
you very
indeed.
Much. Thanks a million. See you tomorrow, Pam.
Rachel Slan, thank you so much for joining us. Take care of yourself. Bye-bye. All right. Okay. That was Pamela, Rachel, Bernadette and Rachel's Pamela's sister. It's just hard to keep track of all the names. 16 years after the first sod was turned and still no stadium in Stranorlar. We got an update there directly from Ian Harkin. Planning's going in and it seems the funding's in place. Greg, you talked about letters and contacts you received about people in a housing emergency. Can you forward them to Simon Harris's office? I mean, I mean, that would be me campaigning on behalf of them. I can use this show to give people an opportunity to express what's happening in their lives. I could encourage them to do so. Maybe I will. But as I say, it's just so much heartache and worry out there from families who are being told the house is going up for sale. My son's moving back from England or Australia or wherever it might be, or my daughter, you know what I mean? I'm just picking random examples out of my head. And just in the run-up to Christmas, you've got, you know, families with two or three kids, and there's nowhere out there for them to go. They might be paying, if they're lucky enough, 800 or 900 euro, and they're looking at knowing, well, what's out there in the market available for me, 1300-1400 euro. Where are you going to find 500 or 600 euro extra a month if you're already scraping by? Really worrying. For people, it really is, and it's something that bothers me greatly that people are in that situation. A caller says, I love how all these Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael candidates claim what they're going to do for us, yet they've been in power for about 10 years. Why wasn't all these things achieved in that time? And I mean, people, just an observation, there was an awful lot of talk in the run-up to the budget about reducing the VAT rate for food-led businesses and what have you, and they just couldn't get it over the line. But now we have Fine Gael committing to, and it's going to do, they're going to do well with it, because it's a big deal for businesses. They're committing, I think, to reduce VAT rates in those areas down to 11% in the first 100 days of government. That's a nice offer, and people might go, right, I'm going to go for that. But others will say, well, you know, you could have done that over the last 10, 12, 15 years. You know what I mean? Is Michael O'Leary, CEO of Ryanair, really endorsing Fine Gael? If so, it says a lot, as his interests are, in my opinion, making rich people richer. Was he having a laugh at teachers? There was some laughter in the room, as on the video. Teaching is not an easy profession, especially nowadays. Will this backfire on Fine Gael, I wonder, for a day or two? The news cycle moves on very, very quickly. Enoch Burke says a caller is in jail because he's defending the right to free speech, and by him agreeing to purge his contempt of court would mean that he is accepting that the school was right in sacking him for not agreeing to recognise and accept transgenderism. And well, you know, Greg, it's a Ireland's great shame that he's still languishing in jail. It depends. You can extrapolate along the journey as to why. What's the trigger? Was it the day someone walked into the office and said to him, you know, by the way, you're going to have to use this name and those pronouns for that student? And he says, I'm not doing that. Which, to be honest with you, I don't even see that as standing up to transgenderism, because, you know, people have different names all the time. But anyway, I at that point, I can understand why it was a challenge for him. But you kick it on, and the stuff that went down the line, he's not actually sacked at the moment. I believe he's actually he's appealing his dismissal, so I'm not sure. I think he's still getting paid by the school. But he kept turning up at the school. You know what I mean? He kept turning up at the school, and he got a court order against him turning up at the school. Now, if he agrees, I'm not turning up at the school, does that mean that he's given in? No, because he can use his platform then, if that's what he wants to do, to express his points of view. He's languishing in jail, but he doesn't have to. He can get out of jail and do whatever he wants to do. But it's up to him whatever he wants to do. He's a fully grown adult. Morning, Greg. I saw a guy in an e-scooter last Wednesday at Manor Roundabout. He was heading up the dual carriageway towards Letterkenny. I didn't know they're allowed on major roads. I had to do a bit of double take when I saw him. Yes, they are, you see. They are available. They're supposed to be used on roads. I'm not sure when there is a cycle path available, what the rule is there. But they're not supposed to be on footpaths. So either on the road or on the cycle lane is my understanding. But they're very vulnerable looking when they're on the road, I think.